right, here we go. Our number three is my guest, Jordan Maxwell, on this St. Patrick's Day, 1998. Let's hit the phones one more time. Barry is calling in, listening to us on KRKO. Hi, Barry. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
Hello. I'm Mr. Maxwell.
Hello there.
Jeff, this is a great show. Mr. Maxwell, you're fascinating.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate
fascinating,
that.
Fascinating, man. I have a question that I would really like your opinion on, about an experience I had back in 1967, just to see what you would say about it from your experience and research. I was by myself, and let me preface this by saying this is not the kind of thing that has ever happened to me before or since. I was in a room alone, and I heard a man's voice seemingly coming from directly behind my head, and it said, very succinctly, "You will be a minister." That was it. I have never known exactly what to make of that, and it was kind of disturbing at the time also, because that was when I was beginning to enter into the same direction of research that you've been going in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I guess by that I mean to say I was not in particularly in line with conventional Christian religious thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I take those kind of things very serious. I don't flippantly disregard them, because I know that such things happen because they have happened to me. I think that you might yet still be, because you see, to be a minister does not necessarily mean to be a clergyman in a church. John the Baptist, we're told, was the greatest among men. He was the greatest single individual among men. But anyone who knows anything about John the Baptist knows that he lived up in the mountains and ate honey and locusts.
Mm-hmm.
And came down only once a year to pronounce curses on everybody, and then went back up on the mountain for another year.
Well, I'll go pronounce curses on people then.
I'm just kidding. But the point being is that you don't have to be a man of the cloth or a clergyman to be a minister. I believe that if the Spirit calls you, that one who calls you to a work is sufficient. You don't need to be necessarily ordained by a church or a group. I think that the calling of God is sufficient, and maybe yet you are to be a minister. But I would think the mere fact that you're calling and asking that question means that you're on the road to a very powerful and priestly work that you are to do. You know, and I would think seriously about beginning your research into where things have come from, what is the real legitimate foundations for what we have come to know as religion and theology. And it might be something you want to do, to have the you know, the kind of material that I've been dealing with for 40 years, because that basically is what I consider myself. Without actually saying it, I consider myself to be a clergyman, or I've been ordained three times in my life in three different times. So I am an ordained minister, but I don't necessarily, talk about that. But I feel that I do have a calling, and my calling is a very individual kind of thing. I want to know the truth. I want to know the truth about where things came from, and then I want to be able to help others to see this same kind of research.
Mm-hmm.
It might be that you have the same calling.
Thank you for your opinion there, and in fact, my research has gone into that direction and has for some time. Can I ask another question?
Go ahead.
I'm wondering about, my research has taken me heavily into the realm of synchronicity, or the whole concept of synchronicity, and I'm wondering if...
That.
If you have given any considerable thought to that, and I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
All right, Pete, thanks very much for calling.
Thanks.
You bet.
How synchronistic you should ask that. No, in point of fact, I am a total believer in that which we call synchronicity, because I have had it happen to me virtually all of my life. And therefore, I am not able to adequately explain what I understand to be synchronicity, but there are too many times when I'll be thinking of someone, they call. When I feel that there's something wrong, I find that I was right. I've had way too many experiences in my life not to know that there is some sort of a, for lack of a better term, a communication going on with our spirit of who we are with that divine spirit in the universe, and so I'm a believer.
Not only that, Jordan, but aren't we all part of the same consciousness? And it's not a surprise that everyone at one point or another dips into that in a conscious sense and realizes something intuitively, instantaneously from this one consciousness that we all are cogs in.
Yes, we are all products from the same hand, so to speak. Therefore, we all have a part of that one that created us or brought us into being, or ever how you wish to explain it. To, there are different ways of explaining the same phenomena, but I think we all know what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I'm totally convinced.
Let's hear some more of your experiences. That's fun, always fascinating. And by the way, we could spend this 3 hours with Jordan Maxwell crossing I's. No, that's not what you do. You dot the I's and cross the T's, see?
Yeah.
Got me confused now, thinking in Greek again.
Yeah.
With Jordan talking about the specifics of so many things in history, it's amazing what this man knows. And we're just keeping it rather light tonight, but let me give you the phone number again for his book and video. 818-757-0814. 818-757-0814 for Jordan Maxwell's 90-minute video, which is great, and his 396-page book, equally as impressive, each $25 plus $5, or both for $55. So there we go. Okay, Jordan.
Right. To give you an idea of the kind of experiences that I have had, and I have about 60 that I have written down over the years. Every time I think about one of the momentous experiences in my life, I write them down to try and remember them. When I was 9 years or 10 years old, something around that, 9 to 10 years old, I was raised in a little small town, northwest Florida, right near the Alabama-Florida state line. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, I woke up in my night clothes, 9, 10 years old, about 5 miles from my home. And I was on a concrete bridge, an overpass over train tracks, and I was on the west side of town. And I was freezing cold. I couldn't imagine how I had got there as a 9 or 10 year old kid. And I'm standing in my night clothes, freezing cold. And I remember chattering, my teeth were chattering, and I was trying to pull myself up between the girders of the bridge to block off the cold wind. And I remember distinctly trying to figure out what I should do. If I ran to my grandmother's house, I mean, what would I say to her at that hour in the morning in my night clothes? How am I going to, you know, what am I going to say to her? If I went to my uncle's house, who was even 5 miles further, if I were going to do anything, I should run home, but it was too far, and I'm cold, and I was frightened, and I really didn't know how I got there. And so while I was standing there trying to keep warm, I saw a car coming toward on the street at the bridge, running red lights. I can, you know, from my point at the top of the bridge, I'm watching this car, and it's running all the red lights, and of course, it's late at night, so there's virtually no traffic. But nonetheless, the car is speeding and is running red lights. And as it begins to come up the bridge that I'm on, as it comes up, they're speeding. I recognize the four kids in the car. They were high schoolers, and there were two boys in the front seat, two girls in the back seat. I knew them well. They waved at me. I waved back to them. And they shot down the other side of the bridge, and there was an all-night cafe coffee shop at the on the other side of the bridge on the bottom. And as they got down to the bottom, they were speeding as fast as they could go, and they blew a tire on the passenger side and lost control of the car. Well, I'm standing at the top of the bridge watching this, and the car spun out of control. I hit the gravel of the parking lot, bounced over the curb and hit the gravel of the parking lot, crashed into two or three cars that were in the parking lot, and then ended up crashing into the front of the coffee shop. And I'm standing there as a nine-year-old, freezing to death, not knowing why I'm there, and watching this terrible accident. And I started crying because I realized the I had at least the presence of mind to realize the tragedy that I had just witnessed. And so I ran across the bridge and started running down the other side. And I almost tripped a couple of times, and I remember yelling out to myself because I was running as fast as I could down there, "Don't trip because you'll knock your teeth out." And I ran down, and I ran across the gravel, and it was at that point it occurred to me that I don't have any shoes on, and I'm on gravel, and it's killing me. And so I'm running across the gravel, but I'm frightened to death of the chaos which has ensued. Obviously, if a car spins out of control in the front of a restaurant, it's going to be absolutely chaos. And I ran inside. I ran over glass. I remember thinking how stupid of me to be running over glass barefooted, but I there was nothing else I could do. And so I ran inside, saw incredible things. And so we'll have to finish this when we come back.
Okay, all right. Be right back with Jordan Maxwell here. I'm Jeff Wrench. You're listening to Sightings on the Radio, and we shall continue right after this. Okay, we're back. All right, Jordan, let's hear the rest of that story.
Okay, are we back?
You are. Go ahead.
Okay, so I'm looking around, and I'm actually hysterical. I'm crying because I see so much bloodshed, and you can imagine this kind of a scene on a nine-year-old psyche. What a child would go through at that age?
Just horrible.
And it was absolutely tragic. I was crying as loud as I could, but I wanted to help people, but I didn't know how to help anyone. But I knew, at least I had presence of mind to know that some people are beyond help. Help the ones you can help. And so as I'm turning to see who I might be able to help next, I woke up in bed, and I was absolutely ballistic. I was crying. I was totally out of control. And my parents come running in. And they, you know, the neighborhood must have thought I was being killed because I was really out of control. And so my mom and dad finally talked me down and quieted me down after about 10 or 15 minutes. And then they explained to me that what I had experienced was a very vivid and bad dream. And I was amazed to be back home. And so I sat there and told my parents all the details. And they knew the four kids that I had seen. They knew them also. They knew the car. They knew the whole thing they were familiar with. And so I told them all of the details. I told them about the man that I had tried to help by pulling him out of the debris. I don't even know if I mentioned that. There was an old man sitting on the floor and blood all around him and all over him. And he kept motioning for me to come over and help him, which I did. I pulled him by his shirt and tried to pull him, and he helped me. But moving himself, and I pulled him off to the side. And so I related all of this in detail. And so the next morning when I got up, in the morning's paper, exactly what I said happened, exactly as I said it. It's precisely every single detail that I had related to my parents the night before was in the paper. And the four kids were killed. There were many other people that were killed in that accident. And I was there. I felt the cold. I saw them. They waved at me. I waved at them. I ran down the hill. I saw the whole thing in detail. I was there. I actually put my hands on the old man to hold him, pull him.
Yes, yes.
So I'm saying to myself this very day, how is this possible to go out of your body, so to speak, or to go somewhere and have this kind of an experience? Is this possible? To say that something like this is demonic, I believe, is very, very, very iffy, because a nine-year-old child is not going to be involved in demonic stuff. This was something that happened to me that I didn't ask for. And consequently, that's why, and that was one of many, many stories that I can tell you that have happened to me in my life.
Wow.
Which has caused me to respect the spirit. It causes me to have a very high respect for who we are as people.
Let us take care of some of our most interested listeners who are calling in tonight. Mark is on the line from Philly. Hi, Mark. Welcome back.
Wow, that's a great story.
Oh, thank you, sir.
That's a fantastic story. Very interesting. You mentioned earlier, Jeff, and the listeners will know my favorite subject about the Anunnaki that you started talking a bit about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm very intrigued by the Anunnaki as ancient sources of occult symbology throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as well as, you know, stretching all the way to Enki and his sign of the double helix serpent symbol, which still today remains as a symbol of medicine.
Yes.
And only recently we realize is a symbol for DNA and so on.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, I'm trying to link together what you've been talking about with the information, which interestingly is, you know, seems to be synchronizing with the coming discoveries and revelation of what's happening and has happened at Sidonia, because that's very current. And I'm looking for something on that. Also, I'd like you to maybe, if you can, talk a little about, I'm very interested in the origin of the term occult, deriving from occultation, in terms of the scientific, you know, definition of the occult. The way I understand it, occultation scientifically means the disappearance of a body behind another body of larger apparent size.
Mm.
And I'm interested in how that links up with, in effect, all of the different Anunnaki monuments and locations around the world, at Machu Picchu, Stonehenge, the Great Pyramid, and so on, in terms of them being, you know, instruments for doing star observances in reverence of the Anunnaki pantheon.
Yes.
And maybe, can you talk a little bit about how that all sort of hooks together?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have a research paper that was done by a friend of mine who I would like to make available to anyone. I consider it to be an absolutely phenomenal piece of research that he has spent quite a few years dealing with, and that is the words and the terms in the Old Testament and New Testament for sons of God. It is his contention, and I believe he's right, that the word sons of God is totally different than angels. It does not mean the same thing as angels. That it is a whole different breed of creation that has nothing to do with angels at all, period. And that that there are different kinds of celestial beings. Some are called sons of God. Some are called angels. Some are called seraphim. There are different words and terms in the Bible. And what he is saying, and again I say I think he's right because I have about a 20-page document that he has been working on for years, and I would make it available to you, and I of course would credit him with the work. But
can you be reached by email at all?
I'm sure he can, but it would be better for you to just reach me on fax, and or order the book and tape from me, and then also say that you talk with me on this subject, and then I will send you his article. I'll send the article to you.
That would be great. Are you familiar with Zechariah Sitchin's latest book, Divine Encounters?
As a matter of fact, I'm the one that published it. I mean, my friend I was telling you about before, Paul Tice, the brand new one is the one that Paul and I worked on with Zechariah Sitchin. We published his newest one.
All right, hold on, Mark and Jordan will be right back and find out what the name of that book is. Paul Tice was the man that went with Jordan to his famous encounter near Area 51. Be right back in about a couple of minutes. See you then. Okay, and we are back with Jordan Maxwell. Go ahead, Jordan. You're beginning to respond to some of Mark's questions there, and
Mark back on the air?
Sure.
Okay, let him again...
Mark, let's have a real succinct serving here of a question or two.
Okay, we actually discussed a little during the break. Maybe you can go into some detail about the cover of Zechariah Sitchin's of Heaven and Earth that you published. I've laid out on my website specifically my theory that it's actually a prophetic tablet representing the Mars Global Surveyor, the Pathfinder, and a lot of other, you know, key aspects of what's happening today with Mars.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how that all sort of seems to be, if you can comment about how that's tying together literally right now as the Global Surveyor.
Okay, now that is the name of the new book, Jordan?
The new book is called Of Heaven and Earth.
All right, that is the one you and Paul Tice have published, okay?
Yes. Paul Tice is actually the publisher, but we've been friends for years, and so I like to say that I'm the one that helped him. But
and
Paul,
it's highly acclaimed. There's a great deal of talk on the internet about the contents, about the speeches that are described, and the full text that's in there. And I'm really looking forward to getting my copy of that.
Well, just get it and just order it, and I'll get it for you.
Great.
And yeah.
What do you make of that? What do you make of that suggestion that I have about that tablet in particular?
Well,
as far as
let me go on and tell you that that I'll give you a little background on something that happened in relation to the book. We were sent the picture that Zachariah sent us, the picture that he wanted on the cover, and told us that we could enhance it and do it whatever way we wanted, as long as the picture was true to form, you know, as long as we didn't change anything on this ancient picture he sent us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took it over and had it, we had an artwork done for the book, and the artist mistakenly, on the picture that Zachariah had sent, there was 7 round white discs.
Right.
And the artist only painted 6.
So that's actually a painting.
Well, yeah, the one that we got on there originally was a painting. Well, then was Zachariah called us and said, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. You need to go back. You made a mistake. It was 7 discs. Go back and count them. Well, we went back and found out we made a mistake. Well, I was wondering, you know, at the time, we said, well, what's the difference, 6 or 7? Well, we found out there's a very big difference.
Big difference.
Zachariah was saying that was a very, very profoundly important symbol.
Absolutely.
And the implications were horrendous once you understand is that there's a fish beneath it, there are 7, and this again goes back to my seeing 7 white round discs.
Hmm.
And then I go back to the reference works. I, as soon as we had this experience with those 7 discs, I began to do some research on 7.
Yes.
And to find out that 7 is the ancient Babylonians, Sumerians, Phoenician, Canaanite, all of these ancient people said that the gods of the Pleiades were represented as 7 white discs. And that was interesting to me. 7 white discs was the symbol that the ancients said represented the Pleiadians or the Pleiades.
Yes, stars. Exactly. And Sitchin goes into detail as far as the 7 representing not only Encke's number for representing the Earth, being the 7th planet from the Nibiru on the way into the solar system, but the way it's also embedded as our 7 days of the week, which isn't derived really for any other reason,
and
the 7 times 7 for the Jubilee. So,
and the 7 candle lampstand actually goes back to the 7 candle menorah lampstand goes back to the 7 lights in the heavens, the 7 little lights or candle lights, 7 little lights in the heavens, which can be traced back to the Pleiades. It's a fascinating study that Zachariah has put together. He's a very, very interesting man, and I really cherish his friendship.
I look forward to meeting him someday. Can you comment a little bit as far as the Pleiades, how the Barbara Marciniak material, if at all, plays in with Sitchin's material?
Well, I'll let me say this. I'm not an authority on this, so I'm not even going to try to be conversant on this. But one thing I do know is that the Pleiades was very important in the Hebrew tradition. In the Jewish tradition, the Pleiades is very important. And, of course, in the early Christian tradition, the Pleiades was very important. The whole idea of the seven congregations of Asia in the book of Revelation, the word 7, I mean, 7 appears in the Bible, Old and New Testament, continually, which is based on the 7 lights of the 7 candles, the 7 little lights of the heavens. So I think the Pleiades are very, very important to Christianity, to Judaism, and to, and of course, we know that so much of the Old and New Testament is what I call universal cosmology or astrology,
right,
to speak. It's a very high form of something we've come to condemn called astrology.
Well, you know, which is typical, but if people will study, they'll find that astrology and astronomy are derived from the same sources, which point back to the Anunnaki. And the last question I guess I'll throw out there to let some other callers, when you folks were talking earlier about the cards, my current, my leanings are that the ace card, the letter A, most likely points back to Anu, the king of the Anunnaki, as being the top of the pantheon.
Yes, You're right that there's a definite connection. There's a definite connection with the Anuit on the back of the $1 bill. Anuit Coeptus.
Yeah.
Anuit can be traced back to the Anu.
And the annual, the word annual.
On that.
Absolutely, and annual. It's shocking what happens. I've got every single one of Sitchin's books, and I've read them all. But when you pick them up and you go back and just randomly read 10 or 15 pages. There's so much material that affects pretty much so many of the different guests that Jeff has in the program, the stuff that you've had to say, David Icke, Lloyd Pye, Bruce Rux, the list goes on. And I really think, I'm glad to hear you're friends with Sitchin. Please send him my regards. And for the listeners that haven't yet read his material, I hope you'll pick it up, because looking back, I think it'll be pretty clear that Sitchin was a trailblazer, we'll be seen as the genius that he is.
Yeah, no
well
doubt
said,
in my
Mark.
Mind about it.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Jordan.
I was going to say, Zechariah became rather perturbed when we sent him the picture, and we sent him a color picture, a photocopy of the color picture we had painted.
Uh-huh.
And he was very perturbed. He called back and said, "I appreciate it. It's a wonderful picture. You've done a wonderful job, and thank you. But no way. You cannot use this picture. I want 7 circles, not 6." And so then after talking to him later on, then we found out why. Because he knew the implications of what those ancient Sumerian symbols meant. And I find him to be absolutely phenomenal and fascinating, and I really appreciate his friendship. Again, I would say that if you are a Christian or if you're concerned with such things as theology and religion and or the New Age or the coming millennium or any of these subjects which dovetail into theology, you will want to get the book and my videotape that deals with a lot of these subjects.
Okay, and the phone number again for that book and video is 818-757-0814. 818-757-0814. Back with more in just a couple of minutes. Okay, and we are back talking with Jordan Maxwell tonight, and just a fascinating conversation, as always, with Jordan. And email questions have been piling up here. Let me get to one here. Please ask Jordan the following. David Oates' work, Jordan, with reverse speech, you're familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Has revealed that our subconscious often deals with metaphors that don't seem to always come from our current culture. Do you feel that ancient symbols still communicate their meaning to our subconscious minds, or are they just symbols now?
Totally, 100%, absolutely sure that ancient symbols are very powerful even today. And we, in our busy, mundane world, zip past these symbols, never, ever suspecting the profound significance of what they play on our mind, on our psyche. The whole subject of mind control, it's an incredible subject, and I've sat in the company of scientists and physicists at lectures and conventions and programs that I have spoke at, and afterwards had the opportunity to sit late in the evening in the restaurant with many of the speakers and listen to government doctors and scientists talk about mind control, the psyche, what the CIA is doing, how the CIA uses mind control through symbols and emblems. I've heard for hours in the late early morning listening to stories about Montauk from scientists and physicists. The whole story of how our brain and how our mind and psyche is influenced through symbols and emblems and words, especially. Words are very, very powerful to the subconscious. And so I have a very high respect for that entire field. I'm actually, in point of fact, frightened by the prospect of how much we have been manipulated. We don't even begin to know it. And that's part of the technology of how to do this in such a way that you would not even know you're being controlled.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Oh.
It's like the mosquito anesthetizing you without you feeling it before he puts his drill in.
That's it. And then you only find afterwards.
After
and
the
a
fact.
Lot of this child abuse and mind control stuff is going on even in government. There's all kinds of stories, documented stories coming out of especially the CIA. I think if there's any organization, and I'm sure there's a lot in government, and there's a lot of institutions that are very bad for our country and for our people and for the whole world at large. I would say in my personal opinion that, and this is a personal opinion, I think the CIA is one of the most corrupt and most evil entities that have ever existed on the face of the earth, and I'm ashamed to allow such an organization as the CIA to be allowed to even exist in our beloved country, because some of the things which the CIA are doing with children, with adults, with mind control, with child abuse, some of the most incredible stories are coming out by people who have been involved in such things, documents.
Oh,
it is
years ago.
Outrageous.
Years
story.
Ago. This goes back a long time. It goes back to the 60s at least, if not the 50s.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, remember LSD was invented, discovered supposedly in 1951, I believe, was the first public notice of it thereabout.
Yeah,
already at that time, you know it was being well tested. Now, let's go up to Spokane. Listening to us on KSBN is Dave. Hello, Dave. You have a question or comment for Jordan?
Hi, you guys. A little bit fascinated with your conversation tonight.
Well, thank you,
I just had to call in tonight. The story that you related was really a hard act to follow. But like you, I've got so many stories. I don't know if I could even count them.
Don't know where to start.
I don't know where to start. Really, yeah. I thought I would tell you one about what happened in 1995 or six. I'm obsessed with art, amongst many other things as well. And I was sitting sketching one night in a meditative mood and came up with the features of a cat, or the visage of a cat with rather human features, and especially the mouth and eyes. The eyes were stylized in an Egyptian form, rather to look Middle Eastern and painted to resemble some of the Egyptian paintings that you've seen. You know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I let it go and whatever. And the next night, I happened to turn on the television and sat down in front of Star Trek. And there was an episode called Q2. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
I don't want to elaborate on it, but it was about a person that was descended from this omnipotent race illegitimately and was being sought after by one of the representatives. And this person's face was exactly the same as this cat that I'd drawn.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, my goodness, you know, wow, what in the world? Sometime later, a friend of ours was visiting, and I was inspired to relate the story of this TV program tour for some reason, and I said, you remember this program? It was called Q2, and it consisted of da-da, so on and so forth. And she said, yes, I remember that. I reached over and turned on the television set, and the person's face that was the subject of the cat was on the screen.
Even then?
Huh?
You mean then?
Right then and there.
Right
yeah.
then and there, mm-hmm. instantly.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Well, again, we're talking synchronicity, and we're talking a higher intellect. We're talking about a higher presence in the universe that is dealing with all of us in different ways. And
well, I'm privileged.
Yeah. Well, I felt privileged at some of the many of the things which have happened to me, but
I'm privileged to be alive. I've been through so many scrapes that have.
Well, I have too.
Every moment should be cherished. Dave, any more comments? We've got other comments.
No, I want you to keep going so I can keep listening.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night, Dave. Let's stay in the same town as Spokane up there and welcome Bill to the program, listening on KSBN. Hi, Bill.
Hello. I listened the other night when Zechariah Sitchin was on. I even called in, and I had a question. I'd like to kind of follow that up. I noticed in the New Testament several times, I read the King James, and they changed a letter in a text from an S to a Z at Mount Zion.
Oh, yes. Oh,
but
yeah.
But in the older editions, that was Sion, which is not Mount Zion in Jerusalem, but it was Mount Hermon in the north of Israel.
Yes, how clever of you to catch that, yes.
And the whole story, it seems like in ancient times, there was a rebellious brotherhood that came down on that mountain, and they set up charge over the whole earth. And in Revelation chapter 14, it said Yeshua, Jesus Christ, would come back with 144,000 on that same mountain.
I think it's very, very interesting that you picked up on that, because I found that many, many years ago, and I've commented to people about that. I am assuming, and from my own research, that there is an enormous, enormous story there as to what we're talking about when we use the term Sion, S-I-O-N, which is Greek for Zion, but the term Sion, and it goes back to even in our day, it goes back to it can be traced back to the 9th and 10th century, to the priory of Sion, a mystic cult group of Freemasons, the priory of Sion, Zion. It's a fascinating story of tracing words and terms.
And yes, I'm familiar with that story a little bit, and I also noticed that that's where the tribe of Dan first emigrated from Israel.
Yes.
And they took the story to the giants who had lived in that area, Og, the king of Bashan, and Sihon,
yes,
which the mountain was named for, king of Heshbon. And they took those stories and they settled ancient Macedon, where the name Macedon comes from the tribe of Dan, who were the Danoi, who settled ancient Greece.
It was not the Danon of the Celtic tribes also.
Yes, it was.
Yes, and that's what we have today. Danish comes from Danites. The Danites are the Danish. There's a whole story there. Basically, the subject is referred to as British Israel philosophy. I've got many, many reference books on that whole subject of tracing those ancient peoples, ancient races of people into our modern-day European culture.
Yeah, I'm right in tune with you. Not only that, that happened to be the same mountain where Yeshua, Jesus Christ, went up with his disciples when he was transfigured.
And that was the same one. As a matter of fact, you know, and I've said this before, in the ancient northern European tradition of the old Celtic and Celtic Druids, and that's something we'll talk about one night, is Druidism. But in the old ancient Druidic northern European tradition, one of the ancient symbols of the Druids was the magic wand, like Merlin the magician with his magic wand.
Uh-huh.
And magic wands were always made out of holly wood. And consequently, we are still observing today the magic of Hollywood, coming from the old Druidic magic of Hollywood.
And not only that, but Moses, when he went before Pharaoh, he took the magic wand and he parted the Red Sea. He took a tetrahedron and he made it expand into a dynamic thing, the snake, when it hit the ground.
Yep.
It brought change into the earth. In the Gospels, we see Yeshua putting a prayer shawl over a dead girl and levitating her, raising her from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of stuff in that in the Bible. There's many subjects that never get discussed that are in the Bible.
Never get discussed. You're right.
Yeah. We'll do more, Bill. We've got to go. We'll have Jordan back again and pursue some of these fascinating things. That is the end of the program. So I'll thank Bill, and let me give the phone number for Jordan Maxwell's book again and tape. It's 818 877-757-0814, 24 hours a day. 396. Why don't we just call it 400-page book and be?
I want to be honest.
Yeah.
And 90-minute video.
90-minute video. Not 89. 90 minutes. Yep. All right. Each is $25 plus $5. Well, $55 for both tonight. Just give a call. 818-757-0814. Thank you, Mr. Maxwell.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Wow, there's another 3 hours of material to think about, dream about, whatever you want to do with it. I'll be back tomorrow night. Michael Lindemann will be here, and Alex Hirschfeld to talk about the Oprah Winfrey trial and the ramifications and repercussions from that. Great show tomorrow. Much to come your way as we continue through the rest of the week here. Sightings on the Radio. I'm Jeff Rentz. Hope you're all well and happy. Take care. Until next time, good luck.